Today on The Grave Talks, The Gill House Ghosts, a conversation with Brenda Trish, Jane Baker, and Mary Butterfield. The Gill House in Galleon, Ohio, showcases Victorian architecture and a rich history that draws visitors from all over. Built by Bloomer Gill as a grand family home, it quickly gained social prominence, hosting gala events that had many notable figures visit, including Harvey Firestone, Thomas Edison, and even Henry Ford. These days, the luminaries no longer stop by, but there are lots of reports of activity. Paranormal activity. Investigators and visitors claim to have heard children's laughter from the attic, and shadowy figures have been spotted moving around the house. The basement holds the most chilling experiences, with visitors reporting disembodied voices, screams, and encounters with a ghostly figure known as Johnny Cake. Bloomer Gill sold the house to the Talbot family, and it seems old Mrs. Talbot still lingers within its walls, evidenced by tapping sounds and swirling mists. The Gill House remains a mysterious place where history and the supernatural merge, inviting both the curious and the brave to uncover its secrets. Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about the Gill House with Brenda Trish, Jane Baker, and Mary Butterfield. Okay, so I'm excited to talk about the Gill House, and tonight we've got Brenda Trish, Jane Baker, Mary Butterfield, and all of you are on the board of the Gill House. Is that right, Brenda?
Yes, that's correct.
So you're kind of the oversight committee, helping run day to day a little bit. Are you a pretty active board?
We're a very active board, and we have since the beginning. Been restoring the house, and that is done basically all with donations, new grants that we get, and that's what keeps us going.
That's a lot of money to restore a house like that. It is incredible.
Luckily, structurally, it's very sound. So most of what we have to do is cosmetics, which is still expensive, but
yes. You know, anytime you get into a restoration of a house that's that age, that size, I'm going to guess, and I don't know, and I do want to get into all this, that it might have sat empty for a while or gone into a little bit of disrepair, because a lot of houses do. And then when you come along, it ends up being a pretty expensive project.
Right. It did set. It was kept up to some extent, but it did sit empty for a while. But it was never like abandoned. It was always in, the last people to live here were the Hesbys, and that family was still owning it when we acquired it actually from Mrs. Hesby shortly before she passed away. And our goal from the very beginning was to restore it.
Because the
architect of this home was a man named Lewis Camper. He was out of Michigan. He did a lot of work for people in the automotive industry, building some really nice grand homes in Detroit, which sadly most of them are gone. But as far as I know, this was done during his neoclassic period. We believe it's the last one of that period that we know for sure he was the architect of. And it's the only one open to the public. And we have the original blueprints that are signed, so we know it was him.
So now this Gill House, in fact, let's even go back before the Gill House was built. The Gill family was kind of like a founding father, if you will, of Galleon. Did they sort
of? I don't know if they've ever been termed that way, but they were here since the middle of the 1800s. And sadly, I'm not the best historian of the group, but this is probably as good as you're going to get. And so they were here from the mid 1800s on. And there, I mean, of course it was a very small community. So we had, you'll hear sometimes that, a man named last name Hosford was the founder of Galleon. Well, there were, you know, some, links, from the guilds to them in the past, like through marriage or what have you. So, I mean, they were here early on.
And how did they make their money? 'Cause looking at this house, I don't know if the money was inherited or, because he's got such an unusual name, Bloomer Baker Gill.
Well, let me tell you why he has that name. Bloomer, his first name Bloomer, his mom and dad were friends with Mr. and Mrs. Bloomer. And there's a Bloomer Drive or street here in Galleon. So, and then Baker was his mother's maiden name.
Okay.
Yeah. We think he went by BB.
Because I have never heard of anyone named Bloomer.
No.
They actually, no. And I noticed too, they kind of had, you know, back, I think the generation prior to him, I noticed another odd name, like a middle name of Woodgill. And it was like her maiden name and Gill combined. And so I thought that was kind of interesting.
A middle name. One of them named James. Yeah.
So I thought this family did not shy away from unusual names.
And they repeated names a lot too. So, although they never repeated Bloomer, obviously, but,
Do you really want to though? So Bloomer, he was born in 1859. Mm-hmm. And there's the original house that was on that property that is still on the property.
It was picked up and moved. This is actually the third house to be standing in this lot. But the one before this was picked up and moved, and it's actually on the other side of the driveway from this house. And there, the previous owners of that house were pretty convinced that part of the original log cabin that sat here was integrated into that house that was picked up and moved. So to some extent, all three of the houses may still be in existence.
Oh, that makes some sense. I like that idea. I'm going to guess that the last house that was moved isn't near as grand as Bloomer's house.
No, it's not. And it's, not at all. And when they moved it, they, you know, built onto it a little bit. So you can tell there's a really old part and then a newer part. But no, nothing like that. And you asked about the money. From what we can tell, for the most part, it was inherited. Nellie Gill, Bloomer's wife, was, I believe, an only child, and her dad was big into the railroad. When she was born, her family lived in the biggest house in Galleon, and it still stands. But no, you know, and other houses were built after that. But so I think she was well-to-do. She inherited some money when her father passed away. And I believe Bloomer also inherited some money from his mother.
They went all out on this house. What would you,
right.
What kind of architectural style would you say?
They say it's neoclassic.
Okay.
Parts of it kind of lend itself to arts and crafts a little. Like the beginning of that, the dining room we're sitting in has a lot of wood, quarter sawn oak. But then there's the kind of fancy parts that have, like by the stairway, there's some columns sort of and kind of scroll work, that kind of thing. We've always heard it referred to as it was his neoclassic period. So it... and we have no real pictures of the inside of the house from when it was original. We don't think it was ever any fancier than it was. We don't think, you know, but
I mean, if you look at the house from the outside, there are columns that, looking at photos of it, look like they're basically two stories tall.
Right. The original porch, the columns were two stories tall.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. When it was built, was everyone in Galleon like, my gosh, have you seen what Bloomer and Nelly are building?
Yeah, it's incredible. Really don't know. Yeah, that's hard to say. But when they were building this, I mean, like beside it would have been, there was a very big Otho Hayes lived beside, and he had a very big Victorian home with like stained glass windows. The Howard Buggy Works, he built that before this one, I think. And it was, it's still standing, a very big brick home. So it wasn't, when he was building this wasn't necessarily the biggest house in Galleon. I mean, it was maybe coming close though.
So did Galleon back in the day have some pretty good industry?
We did, yeah.
What was the industry?
Well, the railroad went through here.
Okay.
All the railroads went through here. So that was one big thing, because we had every railroad line pretty much went through here or nearby Crestline. So later on, we had North Electric, which became AT&T. We had Galleon Iron Works, which did all the road graders that you still find all over the world. But we had the freeze. There was all kinds of industry here at one time. And Galleon was electrified in 1888.
That seems early to me. I don't know when electricity happened.
It is a little early. And, of course, Bloomer's wife was friends with the second Mrs. Edison. So that may have had something to do with it. I don't know.
I mean, a nice little coincidence, but it's kind of awesome to be friends with Mrs. Edison.
Yeah, they were friends before she, because Edison's first wife died. So Nellie and Mina were friends, you know, long before she ever met Thomas Edison. And actually, one of their children is named after her. Her maiden name was Mina Miller, and one of the Gill's children is Mina Miller Gill.
Oh. And like Thomas Edison visited this house.
Yes, at least once.
I also read that Henry Ford did as well.
Yes, we have a picture of him sitting on the side porch. What would have been Bloomer's daughter-in-law, said that her story was always that the first automobile ever seen in Galleon was driven here by Henry Ford to see Mr. Gill.
Isn't that crazy? Like, they never saw a car before, and the one they see in Galleon is driven by Henry Ford.
Right, yeah.
That's not too bad, actually.
No.
So the Gill family raised three or four kids?
Four
kids.
Three girls and a boy.
So they had four kids there, and they owned the house for quite a while.
Probably about 20 years, because I believe the Talbots moved in the mid-20s. And when they moved into this house, Jimmy, who was the youngest, would have been about 12. And the other girls, they were born like one right after another. So the other girls would have been like 18, 19, 20, or no, sorry, 16, 17, 18. So they became adults and moved on. And even, you know, so it's kind of a big house just for two people. So the Talbots took it over. Nellie, we know for sure, moved back into the house that was here before and that had been moved. And that's where that was her address when she passed away.
Now, the Talbots had an interesting dynamic going on when they lived in the house. So
right.
from what I read, at some point, his mother wanted to move in with them. His wife said, absolutely not. In fact, I think it was over my dead body.
The story. Actually, the older Mrs. Talbot, we believe, moved in right at the very beginning. And we don't.
And the two women did.
We're not sure it came later. In fact, I think her name was on the D at some point.
Oh, so she might have helped them buy that house.
Well, he was a well-to-do lawyer, as was his father, I believe. I think the money was probably already there. For whatever reason, the older Mrs. Talbot did live here. She lived upstairs. And Dean and Bonnie lived downstairs. And a wall was built on the main stairway. So there was no access to the upper floor except for the back stairway.
Now, did they build the wall to kind of keep them more separated? Because a house, looking at it, looks plenty big enough. I think I could live in there with all three of you, and we'd have no problem running into each other.
That's exactly right. I think it was just to, well, for one, I think for sure to give them each, you know, the couple and the mother some privacy. But we also understand that the two Mrs. Talbot would not be in the same room together.
Mm. Could you imagine living like that? We've got this ginormous house. How many square feet is it? Do you know?
We think it's about 6,000.
So this is a big house and it's not big enough. It's like we're putting a wall.
Even living upstairs, she would have had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 rooms upstairs.
So they build this wall in the house, and is that wall still there?
Yes. We did put a door through it because with the only access to all the floors of the house being just one stairway in the back, we thought, just because we have the public in here and stuff, we thought there should be another access. So we did put a door through the wall. We plan someday to take the wall down. The beauty of it is the banister, they never cut it. It goes straight through the wall and up the next flight of stairs. So everything, I think, is still intact once we would take that all down.
But that's a project.
Oh, yeah.
That's a project that needs funded, and it's hard always to come up with the money for everything you need, let alone the things that you want to do.
Right. Or have to be done.
Yeah, exactly. Now, after the Talbots owned it, another family had bought it.
So then it was sold to Phil and Jean Hesby. Also, just a minor interest. The only children that were actually lived in the house were the Gills. The Talbots had no children, and the Hesbys had no children. After Mr. Talbot died, Mrs. Talbot went, from what we understand, went on a cruise or some cruises. She actually met and married a ship's captain before she left Gallion. But she met Mr. Hesby on a cruise and convinced him that Gallion was the place to be, and it was. And this was, I believe, in the 50s, 50s, 60s, 70s, Gallion was one of the better places to be because it had so much going on. But she convinced him to come here. When she moved, Phil acquired the house, he and his wife, Jean. And still, to some extent, they just live downstairs. And then eventually he put some offices upstairs.
Now, did it ever sit empty for any amount of time?
I would say, geez, how many years was it empty? How many years was it empty? Like, the Hesbys had other properties, but yeah, I don't think it maybe stood empty for about 10 years. There was a caretaker. They, you know, mowed the lawn and all that stuff. But like, we did have to take care of the roof when we got it. Some other things like that. They hadn't painted it.
Now, is the Preserving Gallion, I don't know if that's a committee or a nonprofit, but...
Well, that's us.
And you guys purchased the home through the nonprofit, correct?
Right.
Actually, some of us. I love that you saved that house.
It was, well, some of us were members of the Historical Society in Galleon, and we convinced that board that saving this house was important. They put up the money for it. We paid them off and then separated. That is one of our main things, is we believe that we should preserve Galleon's built history.
I just wish more towns were forward thinking like that, because, you know, so often those incredible homes get torn down because they've gone into disrepair, and then it costs too much to get them back to what they once were. And so I love, because this is a really beautiful, beautiful mansion, actually. I wouldn't call it a house.
There was Phil Hesby, before he passed away. He wasn't all that big into preservation or anything like that. And at one time, he was trying to sell this lot to Taco Bell, and they would put a Taco Bell here and tear down the house.
No.
But Thomas, who you saw the video of, was one of the people that protested that and saved it. So, and that was many years ago.
Could you imagine driving by what, and you could see this incredible home or a Taco Bell?
Yeah, right.
I am so glad he fought that, because that was the right fight. Now, because we were talking earlier that I had watched a video with him in the home, and you ladies are in the home right now, correct?
Correct.
And with you, you brought some equipment, some investigative equipment. What did you bring with you?
We have a REM pod. Mary's going to talk. We have a REM pod that we have sitting on the staircase. Hasn't gone off this evening yet, but we have seen that to be an active spot. We also have 6 cat balls that are sitting around to see if they go off tonight. And we've had good experience with those as well.
Now, how long have each of you been involved with the Gill House? And I'll start with you, Brenda.
Since the beginning. So I think we're on 10 years now.
Okay. And then
it might be more like 12.
And Jane and Mary, same with you two. It's been quite a while.
Since the beginning, I've been here.
When did you all realize, or did you kind of get that little sense like, you know, there might be something more going on in that house than what we realize? You know, it's an incredible home. We want to preserve it. Then you go in there, it's like, oh, and there's paranormal activity. Did you kind of think that might be a possibility, or any of you kind of those women like me? I drive by a house and I'm like, that house is haunted. Did any of you think about that before you started getting involved with it?
Yeah, well, when I was with the Historical Society, we did ghost hunts at their facility. And so we already knew there was a possibility. Somebody contacted us, and I can't remember his name, but contacted us. I believe he lived in Cincinnati. And he said, and he volunteered just to come up and do this and see what we thought, or see if he thought it was haunted. He did think so, but we kind of already knew. We could tell, and I'm not a sensitive person at all as far as this. I'll explain stuff away and never see a ghost, but we could all kind of tell when we came in. It just, there was a vibe to it for no other explanation. And oddly enough, there was a heaviness in it in some parts that we don't experience anymore.
Maybe whatever that was has moved on.
That would be okay. Because what's here doesn't seem to be, it's not malicious. It doesn't, I mean, we get a little grumpy, but mostly, I feel like maybe lonely, curious is the kind of what we kind of get from the other, from whatever entities are here.
And that video that I was watching with the gentleman, all of a sudden I can't remember his name.
Thomas.
He said in the video that sometimes you see a swirling mist.
I saw that.
You did? That's so interesting to me. What did you see?
It looked like pig pens dust cloud moving across the floor. You could see it, but you could see through it. And I've never seen it since, and I have no explanation for what it was. It was during a meeting. It was 7 o'clock at night or so. And I was just happened to be facing into another room and I saw it. And somebody else in the meeting who had their back to it said that he heard it, or he heard something. He thought somebody was coming in the door. But I saw that. We see a lot of shadows and things like that. But yeah, that's the only time I ever saw that.
That's a very good description, because everyone right now can picture exactly what you saw. Just that kind of swirling cloud, misty thing.
Yep. Above the floor, but not too much above the floor.
Did you open it up to paranormal investigations pretty quickly after purchasing the property? Or was that something that kind of took some talking into? A lot of times a board, there are people on the board that are like, I don't want to do that. I don't believe in ghosts. There's no ghosts there. Did you get any pushback?
No, not really. We did it pretty quickly. We knew that it could, we knew it could give us some much needed funds. From that, the paranormal community is always very supportive of preservation. So, our prices have never been incredibly high. They're more than happy to help us with it. And they know that all the money they give us goes back into the house.
Right. And a lot of times those investigations are happening when the house would be sitting there empty anyway.
Right. Oh, yes, absolutely.
And you can make some money overnight.
Yep.
Do you think that you I should rephrase this differently. Do you have any thoughts on who might still be in the home? Do you think Mr. Gill is still there, Bloomer?
Yeah, I'm going to have Mary and maybe Jane answer, because Mary is, they're both relationships with the ghost here.
Oh, I would love to talk about your ghostly relationship.
Yeah, so I'm going to move this down kind of toward them and have them tell you, because Jane's been here a lot during these paranormal investigations, as has Mary, and they can tell you what people are finding.
Okay, awesome.
This is Jane.
So Jane, what have you experienced when you've been involved with these paranormal investigations?
Everything. I've seen stuff. I've not seen stuff move, but I've seen a ghostly figure walk out of the room one time, and I've seen shadows all over the house and in the basement. I saw, Brenda can explain this part to you, because I saw an Indian in the basement. Scared the heck out of me.
And I read about an Indian in the basement there.
Yeah.
Who do they think that is? Or is there any idea?
Yeah, his name was Johnny Cake. Solomon Johnny Cake.
Solomon Johnny Cake.
But he went by Johnny Cake.
What would his connection be to the house?
Well, when they were building,
I don't know. Maybe it was even the first
house. The first house here. I think it was the first house here. He stopped to say goodbye to the Gills, the Gills that lived in that house, which was James, and rode his pony off into the sunset. So he's known around town. He was known around town. The Indians lived 500 feet.
Yeah, not very far.
Not very far back behind the house. There's a river, and the Wyandotte Indians camped there. And I guess Johnny Cake was the last one. He stopped to say goodbye to the Gills because he liked them and rode off. But I saw him one time.
Okay, I would have probably fainted. But how strange would that be to be in the basement and then see?
Yeah, he looked me in the eyes. He was bent down and looked me in the eyes. I screamed. I ran upstairs to Brenda and my brother Thomas, who were sitting in one of the front rooms because we didn't have heat then. And I explained what I saw, and they both were like, "Well, that's probably Johnny Cake." I didn't know anything about Johnny Cake, and I learned.
That's
quickly.
Interesting. So you didn't even know he'd been associated with the home or in the basement. You just saw him.
Yeah.
Was it so real that it looked like a person, or was it one of those apparitions that were more kind of transparent?
I could tell he had long hair, and he was dark skin and black eyes looking at me, real black eyes. And that's all I saw.
Because you didn't stick around. It's like, I'm running out of here.
No, I ran to Brenda.
So after an experience like that, were you, I don't know that I could bring myself to go back in, but obviously you're there right now with investigative equipment.
Oh, it doesn't bother me at all now. Man, I want to see him.
But it's cool that you did get to see him one time anyway. Yeah. Not
but
many people would.
People that go in the basement, I mean, other spirits. But Johnny Cake, that's where he likes.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the Gill House ghosts with board members Brenda Trish, Jane Baker, and Mary Butterfield. If you'd like more information, just search for the Gill House Paranormal page on Facebook. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, you'll get everything commercial free. Then become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free. Or you could also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.